episode 94 of the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. For today's episode, our topic is managing BDRs and how to break that mold. And here today to talk with us about this episode is David Aronica, Manager of Business Development at Splash.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome to the show. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up at Splash?
Sure, yeah. So like a lot of people coming out of college, I really didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do. And like many millennials, bounced around initially right after I graduated from a couple jobs before figuring out and landing in the startup tech world here in New York. I was working at a real estate firm in Connecticut for about 6 months and doing marketing and everything from graphic design to managing budgets. Decided that I wanted to kind of take a chance and move to New York City from Connecticut, where my family's from, and worked at A&E Networks for about a year in the ad sales department before taking an opportunity at Parsley, where a good friend of mine was a BDR there and was talking to me about the position, and I didn't really know much about sales and from the startup perspective and what the BDR role was at all, and had the opportunity there to build and grow out that team, and did that for about 2.5 years, and recently joined Splash a few months ago.
Awesome. And for those who don't know it, can you just give us a quick background on Splash and what the company is?
Yeah, totally. So Splash is an event marketing platform used by companies like Salesforce and Snapchat and Facebook. And essentially we help those companies scale and design beautiful events.
Awesome. And is it on the enterprise side, because I think a lot of us listeners have probably gotten a Splash invite at one time in
our
lives.
That's how I became familiar with them too.
Yeah. But so on the enterprise side, how exactly are you guys, how are you selling on the B2B side of things?
So in like, how are we breaking into those companies?
Yeah.
So we have a really unique platform in the sense that a lot of these companies are already using Splash and may not even know that we do have an enterprise solution. So that's one way, is just to find the people at these organizations who are already using the free version of Splash. Mm-hmm. And then just educating them on, hey, there's more that you can be doing with the platform, and really just helping them out initially and getting their programs off the ground and then introducing things over time. And that's how we've landed some of our largest customers to date.
Perfect. And last thing before we jump in today, we like to ask all of our podcast listeners, can you tell us one thing about yourself that no one else on this podcast would know about you?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, I've been working in sales tech for a few years now, but really I aspire to have my own restaurant one day.
Me too.
And so all of this that I'm doing now is really just to get to that point at some point.
What kind of restaurant? Do you know yet?
I've got a couple ideas, but Lauren, I'm not sure I can share that with you here on this.
We're not that close yet.
You know, maybe we'll see how this podcast goes.
All right. Okay, so let's jump into our topic today. I thought, you know, given your experience of building out a BDR team at Parsley and now at Splash, you know, in the early days, how did you decide whether you wanted to spend your time more on hiring or training? And what was a better use of your time?
Yeah, so in the early days, this is probably where I made some of my earliest mistakes, and that just came from a lack of experience. Sasheen Kamdar is the CEO over at Parsley, and he really gave me my first introduction into forecasting and how starting with revenue goals and working back from opportunities to understanding how many meetings need to be created to generate those opportunities. And that was how we figured out how we were going to scale and build the BDR team. Because I was working backwards and landed on this number, I decided that, okay, the number one most important thing for me right now is to hire and get this team up to a number of people that's going to help us hit this goal. Mm-hmm. Looking back, I realized that I probably could have just doubled down on training and improving our processes and really started to not focus as much as the reps we already had on the team. And because of that, overgrew the team, fell short of some of our goals initially because I was spending too much time on hiring and training new reps and not focusing enough on the messaging and driving the success of the current reps that we had on board already.
Perfect. And so, you know, when you were focused on the hiring side of things, and we'll get more into the managing and training later, sure. But, you know, first on the hiring, who was this ideal candidate you were looking for in the early days, and has that changed at all?
Yeah, totally. So in the early days at Parsley, I think it might have been a combination of my lack of confidence in myself that led me to want people, experienced veteran BDRs, and we had a very complex product there. I felt that it was really important that you already had the chops of being a BDR. It was people who maybe didn't have the career path at their current job or were looking for something different that could fall in love with the product and the media industry. So I was looking for these super experienced BDRs. Well, not super experienced, but people with like a year to year and a half, mm-hmm. Who were already at software companies and who I could help get on another career path. That has changed. And what I found is that I was really getting people that were already kind of burned out in this role. And they weren't doing their best BDR work with me. They'd already done their best BDR work and they were just there for a, you know, jump start into something else. That has completely changed. My focus is now on the complete opposite. I really prefer just to look for people with a personality that I can train and that I want to be friends with too, who I really believe in.
And was there some function of these BDRs with experience coming in but not having the experience that you necessarily wanted them to have? It's almost like trying to train an old dog new tricks sort of thing.
That is, yeah, exactly right. And I think that they've already got the idea that, okay, I'm going to get into this organization. I'm going to do this role really well for like 2 to 3 months, and then I want to become an account executive, right? And mm-hmm. Of course, that's the launch pad is for being a BDR is to get to that next role. And that's the context I was hiring people into the organization under. But yeah, I mean, it just certainly, you know, it was very hard to kind of retrain and remold these people when they came with such experience.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of your like hiring techniques that you follow now to make sure that you are bringing in the candidates that you know that you need?
Yeah, so I really believe in uber transparency when it comes to hiring. I think that we often are overselling it, our own organizations and thinking, you know, if I can convince this person that everybody is hitting quota, then they're definitely going to want to join our organization. And I have gone the complete opposite direction and just being extremely transparent in terms of what exactly it is that I'm looking for, what you're going to be essentially graded on and ranked on every single the metrics that I'm looking for outside of just like meetings completed, for instance, as like the base metric, but understanding what it is that we look for to get us there and then the traits that I'm even interviewing for, and so that they have a really good idea of exactly what this organization is about. And if people aren't hitting quota, I tell them, hey, we only had 40% of our reps hitting quota last month. Here's why. Mm-hmm. Now, here's why I'm trying to improve this. Here's why I think you can be a part of that. And that has just helped me, one, set the right expectations off the bat. Mm-hmm. And two, just get the right people who want to join the company for the right reasons, not just because they think, oh my God, this is some amazing sales organization where everyone's hitting 150% of quota, when we all know that's not necessarily realistic.
Right. So it seems like you've been doing this for a while and you've learned a lot through your mistakes that you've made along the way.
Totally.
Like everybody does.
Yep.
And that's really the only way to do it. But can you tell us, and you've already mentioned a few, but maybe some of the other mistakes you've made and learned from in growing the team?
Yeah. I mean, I think the number one, and I guess I did touch on this a bit earlier, was just thinking that I could solve a revenue problem or a pipeline generation problem by just throwing numbers at the solution.
Right, because you were just applying the simple math of.
I was just
here's
doing
what
your,
the pipeline
yeah,
looks
you know,
like
startup and, funnel. You know, that yeah. was it was the classic stuff that we base our forecasts on, and not realizing that maybe I could actually like get everybody to hit twice their quota if I spent more time training them, mm-hmm. and even the people who were hitting quota, mm-hmm. doesn't mean that they don't still deserve or need continuous training. Mm-hmm. So that was something that I, not investing in continued training. And, you know, I think something maybe I haven't mentioned is just painting a super clear picture of how do you get from where you are now to the role that you want next. And kind of being way too ambiguous between, like, you know, I'm going to get you to the AE role, or I'm going to get you this customer success role. And now what I do is I really kind of just paint it out with exquisite detail of, like, these are the things. Mm-hmm. If you do these, because then it allows the reps to, like, check boxes. Right. And really have a vision for how they're going to get there. And mm-hmm. I think that's really what we should be doing as managers, just paving the path and allowing them to kind of get there on their own.
Yeah, absolutely. So I thought maybe we could shift a bit into talking about managing and training the BDRs now.
Sure.
You know, these days, nearly all BDR hires are going to be millennials.
Yep.
So can you talk to us about, you know, what you look for in these candidates?
Yeah, so I think now I've shifted into a model where I really just, I want people with the right personality, not the right experience. And because of that, I think that there are, that we have these key characteristics that we look for and that we try to interview for, and sometimes even do like exercises and things to try to unleash those things. As a millennial myself, I think mm-hmm. it's kind of brings a different perspective into how to manage millennials, right?
Totally.
So what I'm looking for is people that are entrepreneurial, but that doesn't mean that you've had to start a company while you were in college, right? Because often I'm sure. getting people who are right out of college, but maybe you took an initiative to start a club, or you started your own blog, or mm-hmm. You know, when you were a kid, every single weekend you had a lemonade stand and you realized that, you know, Orangeade was actually better, right? And so it just changing something in some way, that is an entrepreneurial trait, right?
Sure.
And then I think that it's hard to kind of uncover tenacity, right, and grit, but I think that you can kind of feel it in the room, mm-hmm. and which is why having an in-person interview is so important.
Yeah.
Not to say that I won't also do Skype interviews, certainly as well, but most importantly is just coachability. And I think that it's one thing to want advice and to ask for advice, and that's a totally other thing to then actually apply that advice. Mm-hmm. And because I can tell you, you know, this is, you know, this call, we can improve your call cadence, or these emails are not connecting. But if you're not listening at the end of the day, or you don't want to apply those things, it's kind of hard to work with you over time.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So maybe you could just give us an example of some of the questions you like to ask in interviews to kind of suss out these personality traits that you're talking about.
Yeah. So I think that one thing that I like to ask in terms of like trying to understand like tenacity is just like, you know, tell me about something that you had to do for a long period of time. And how did you stay focused? Right? Like, what was it that drove you to stay focused in that position?
Mm-hmm.
And understanding, like, okay, can people wrap their minds around, like, the larger reason why they're doing this potentially menial task, mm-hmm. and what the goal is of getting that done, really helps to uncover some interesting things. And then something that I love to do is to do a role-playing exercise and ask them to sell me anything that they are, you know, maybe the most recent app that they've downloaded.
Sure.
And then, because I don't want to put you on the spot and say, hey, sell me Splash,
right?
Because, you know, and maybe they've used Splash before, but I think that would be tough. Kind of ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
So tell me, sell me on something. Let's have a conversation about something that you already know, and then give them feedback. And now, do they incorporate that feedback back into mm-hmm. the second time you go through the role play? And I usually won't necessarily be the person that does the role play for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have someone else step in, and then I'll say, hey, did they improve on this and this? And were they able to actually act on that feedback?
Sure. Great. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts as a millennial. You know, if you feel a need to manage differently to sort of tend to some of the stereotypes of millennials, or even what are your views on those stereotypes more generally?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of the biggest stereotypes that millennials get labeled with is that we're always thinking about what's next and not focused enough on what's in front of us right now. And
mm-hmm.
it's what's my next role and what's the role after that. And I actually think that that's a very good thing that as managers we should be acting on. When managing millennials, we don't necessarily want to be told what to do. Mm-hmm. We want to crowdsource ideas and be able to work with the people around us to get to the best solution. I try to create a collaborative environment that I support them and give them the resources and the tools that they need. But also have to understand that people learn in so many different ways, and you have to give them the ability to learn either by, you know, one-on-one coaching or team coaching or visual or reading or watching videos, and just really taking all of that into consideration when I'm training and continuously coaching reps. But I think because we know that millennials are thinking about their next role, we should be fostering that and not hindering and taking away from it, and really showing them the light and paving that path for them and then letting them get there on their own. Mm-hmm. And that is when you're going to have the most success, instead of just telling them, show them how they can get there and then let them kind of own their own business and make it happen for themselves.
Definitely. So can you break it down exactly, you know, what does the training entail for your BDRs? Are these formal sessions? Are they one-on-one meetings? I mean, it sounds like they're a little bit tailored to each person, but can you give us a sense for what training kind of means to you?
Yeah, totally. I mean, so when you come into, we just brought in a fresh class. Mm-hmm. I know that what we did off the bat was created a real classroom environment. I think that it's mm-hmm. super important to create that kind of student learning environment, where, because at the end of the day, you need to study, right? You have to learn about the product, you have to learn about the market, and then you have to learn about our sales process. Mm-hmm. So over the course of 2 weeks, we kind of hone in on those three areas. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the actual training, yeah, there's a lot of PowerPoints and then... people that we bring in from all over the organization. This is an important part I will hit on, is not just having the sales leadership involved in the training of reps, but getting the customer success leadership involved, getting the marketing leadership involved, mm-hmm. and the executives involved as well. But that's just the initial training part. And I think that we try to incorporate as much exercise and feedback into that as possible, so that we'll then do case studies. And you'll have to go through, and we'll give you a certain account, and go through and show us how you can prospect into this account based on the personas we laid out for you today, right? Mm-hmm. And have them work through that exercise as a team, and then give them feedback and have them do it again, and continuous feedback. When it comes to training continuously for the reps, I create a number of different scorecards and frameworks that they can fit their kind of strategy into. Now, this doesn't always work for everybody, because some people don't want to be kind of fit into that mold that we're mm-hmm. talking about, right? Mm-hmm. But at least gives them a baseline to understand, what is it that I'm looking for from my perspective? What is it that makes a great email? What is it that you should be getting across on your voicemail? What is it that you should be getting across on your discovery call? And giving them that framework. But when it comes to training, I don't try to act like I know everything and that my opinion is the only way that it should happen. If you mm-hmm. have an opinion about, I always give them the chance to like fight back on me. Mm-hmm. If I'm like, this email is terrible, I will often give them the chance to say, well, here's what I was thinking. Right. And here's why I presented it this way. And honestly, Lauren, over the past few weeks, I've had a number of situations where I've been like, you know what? You're right. I changed my mind about the way that I was thinking about this. Thank you for bringing that to light. And I think that's helped me create some really good relationships.
Absolutely. And it's a good lead into our next question, which is, you know, just on a broader note, what are your thoughts on managing the expectations of millennials?
Yeah, so I think that kind of goes back to that, just like complete transparency. And then the other thing is like, you have to be able to be agile and shift your strategy. But I think that's, there has to be a general approach that you take that cannot change. Because that is when you start to really lose trust. Mm-hmm. I made the mistake at Parsley of month over month, kind of rejiggering the strategy and refocusing how I looked at different things. And that really made the team lose trust in me from times, and it was hard to build that trust back up. So having really like an unwavering approach or kind of overarching strategy, of course, if something's not working, you need to be able to change quickly. But transparency and just a strong backbone is how you can really create the most trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree and appreciate that. So I guess then, you know, I just want to take a quick step back then. You know, you don't want to be changing too much, and you kind of want to stick to what you're saying, but there must be a level of, you know, you making sure that you are aligned with the goals of the company.
Of course, yeah.
And then those kind of bleed into how you train and incentivize the BDRs. So how do you, as a manager, just make sure that you're aligned with the broader goals of the organization?
Yeah, I mean, everything that, you know, I'm implementing at the BDR role is in respect to what our broader goals as a sales team are, mm-hmm. right? And what our broader goals as a company are, but also all the way down to what are the goals of the customer success side? Because at the end of the day, we're bringing in prospects. If they're not the right people and don't fit into the mold of our organization, then we're going to fail over time. Mm-hmm. And retention, we all know, is extremely important. And that you can really boil that down. Of course, account executives might be pushing things through at the end of the month that maybe shouldn't have gone through, but BDRs are kind of teeing all of that stuff up. Mm-hmm. And so tapping into the overall strategy and having consistent meetings with leadership across the entire company, not just sales leadership, is how I try to make sure that those goals are incorporated into everything that we're doing at our level.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So just to break it down, are you having weekly meetings? Who sits in on the meetings? What do you guys talk about? You know, just a quick checklist, or how do you just make sure you know what you need to know in order to
execute. I think that like there's a time and a place to get into the weeds and a time and a place to like just get the things that I need to get done and mm-hmm. get back to what my responsibilities are. Mm-hmm. I meet bi-weekly with our marketing and our customer success teams, mm-hmm. And I meet weekly with our vice president of operations and sales, and then bi-weekly with our chief revenue officer. That being said, I am extremely, you know, have got built a relationship with our head of customer education, who I train with consistently to bring his perspective into what we're doing, mm-hmm. So that there's always customer-centric training and focus in what we're doing. So it's not just all coming from a sales-driven approach.
Perfect. Great. And then, you know, final question for me today, any final thoughts for our listeners before we sign off?
Yeah. Have your BDRs spend time with your customers. The most important thing is getting when you're doing cold outreach, right, is speaking the language of the people that you are selling to. And it's one thing for me to sit in a room and try to train you and say, you know, here's what event marketers care about. It's another thing for them to hear that from an event marketer. Mm-hmm. So being able to speak that language is the most important thing. And the best way to get that done is to have them sit down and meet with customers and sit on customer, you know, training calls and sit on customer check-in calls. And I don't think that organizations incorporate that enough. So hopefully, I think that's one thing that should be a big takeaway.
Great. Well, thanks so much, David, for coming on the show.
Great. Thank you, Lauren. Hold tight.